There's a lot to say when buying a new home or car, but only one thing to say that can help you protect them. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. And just like that, a State Farm agent will be there to help you choose the coverage you need, no matter where you are in life. When you need coverage options, your State Farm agent is there to help, on the phone or in person. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery. Code Wondery.
Hey guys, the Nerds Podcast number 455. Hey, Jonah Ray.
Hey. Hey, Chris.
I love having you in a semi-hostful intro. Matt Myra's not here. He's working on At Midnight at the moment.
He's working all the time these days.
He is.
Yeah, yeah. Not me. Living a life.
What life?
Oh, just fucking zen life. It's great.
What fucking zen life?
It's great. I'm happy. I'm relaxed.
Yeah.
It's very nice. Money in the bank, job coming up. Got nothing else to do. It's great.
What do you do all day?
I write, go on walks, I exercise, I see movies that I've been meaning to catch up on, old classics that I haven't gotten around to.
I don't understand. If your calendar doesn't tell you you need to be somewhere with a corresponding color code, how do you know where you're supposed to be?
Because you're just supposed to be.
Okay, for the listeners at home, you can't see the small spin wheel pinning and spinning in front of my face.
No, it's been great.
Not to get viewed. Well, I hope you come back on At Midnight, which is back January 6th.
You can probably, just have me on. You don't have to say you hope. I'd imagine that you can have some sway in me coming back on.
Oh, it's a bunch of executive producers.
Oh, really? Right.
Yeah.
Third month?
Big committee, yeah. Yeah, have me on a third month.
Cool. No, I'd love to come back.
Well, I'll tell you what,
if
you could send in another tape, and I mean tape, like half-inch VHS.
Yeah, yeah, I can do that.
Send another tape of just you commenting on the internet, and we'll take your previous win on the show, and then just weigh it against that, and we'll pass it around and make sure we do our due diligence.
People still bring up that we were jabbing at each other the entire time.
Were we?
I thought we were just us. That's just how we are. But I guess it's because we were the only ones in the show doing that.
Maybe if people don't listen to the podcast, maybe they don't know that.
Maybe.
That's weird.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, anyway, if you get to come back on the show, I'm very excited to do those pretend jabs.
So many things you could fire me from if we get back on that show.
The funny thing is I can't fire you from anything.
No, you can't. You can make me feel unwelcome. That's a way to do it.
I'd be lost without you. Hey. I really would.
Hey, I'm a good barometer. I'm a good bro-ometer.
Oh. All right. I think I'll be okay. I think I'll be all right. You know who I'm going to thank for sponsoring this episode of the podcast?
I want to go with Carbonite.
You do?
Yeah.
Well, that's who you should go with, listener. This episode of the Nerds Podcast is brought to you by Carbonite, which is online backup. Everything in your life is stored on a computer.
Your life.
What are you talking about?
Everything in your life is stored on a computer.
Yeah, everything in life is stored on a computer.
Yeah.
All those walks you take, make a log of those, take Instagram pictures, you take pictures and put them in store them in a hard drive somewhere.
Then I keep them on the cloud.
Yeah, okay, great. So that's what Carbonite would do.
Oh.
It would store everything. You know those clouds you look at when you're on your quote-unquote walks?
Yes.
In quote-unquote nature, quote-unquote relaxing?
Yes.
Well, there are also virtual clouds that store information, so if you lose your hard drive, you can have all of your stuff back immediately. Plans start at just $59.99 a year. It's a better backup plan. Use the offer code Nerdist and get 2 bonus months of Carbonite with purchase. It just backs all your stuff up in the background, so you don't even know what's happening. And then when tragedy strikes, well, bam!
It's all there.
Just repopulate.
You have no idea that it's doing its job until you're ready to have it.
That's right.
It's the best insurance plan I've ever heard of.
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I'm saying.
Yeah.
It's like Kyle. It works silently in the background.
Silently? My ass.
Until just now.
Yeah, yeah.
Until just now.
Kyle, you're still in your 20s. I don't think you have the right to laugh like an old Jewish man. Kyle, there's a ghost behind you.
I believe that's called shemping.
Shemping? I am.
Ghost! It's ghost!
The newest craze to hit the internet's Carbonite.com. Enter the promo code Nerdist. This episode is Will Forte, who I don't know Will that well. We've only hung out a couple times and just in passing, and I'm very excited to talk to him about we're waiting for him to get here. So we're recording this intro before the show. I'm assuming he's going to be a nice guy and all the amazing things that guests are when they come on. Yeah. But Will Forte apparently is crushing it in Nebraska, which has been nominated for 5 Golden Globes.
The movie, not
Picture.
The state.
Not the state, the movie.
Yeah.
Although I hear Lincoln, Nebraska is a very cool place to go. I've not been there yet. There's been one place I haven't actually performed is in Nebraska.
Yeah, there's a lot of places we haven't performed. I'm sure they'll say it in the comments section. But yeah.
There's a lot of places you haven't performed.
I'm sorry. I thought you said we.
I was for a second. I meant the royal we.
Oh, yeah.
I refer to myself in the third person.
No, plural. That is the royal we, is both of us.
No, I mean me, but plural me.
But with royalty.
I'm like a walking Big Love.
Oh, okay. I see.
Yeah. Will Forte, and I haven't seen Nebraska yet, and I feel bad that I haven't seen it yet. It
looks really good. It's Alexander Payne.
Yep.
You know?
I do know.
Yeah. He hot off his Descendants wins.
I don't know if it's hot off. That was a couple of years ago.
Yeah, but like it's his next movie.
Okay. Well,
people don't have to put stuff out every day, Chris.
They do.
No. They could just go away for a bit and work on a thing and then come back.
I don't understand what you're saying. Pardon me while I shout.
They'll remember. they'll remember. He goes, Chris, there's a werewolf and a mummy right behind you.
Should I podcast them or build a show around them? Here's Will Forte and the Nerds Podcast number 455.
Still alive.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Yes, I did go to UCLA. I was there in 89 was my first year. And I was there until 93. 89 and 93.
I got there in 88 and stayed till 93.
Damn. I would have stayed another year, but then I started working at MTV and I left.
That is so funny. Oh my God. Were you doing like all the acting school, drama school stuff?
No,
like
I was
that?
A philosophy major. I went into UCLA as a math major and then I ended up in the philosophy department. But I was doing I was in this there was a group that was a stand-up comedy club, like not a physical club but like a school club, and so I was in that group from the whole time I was there, and so we would do dorm shows and stuff.
That is so I was a history major, so I was I didn't start doing comedy until I worked at a brokerage firm for like 2 years.
What?
After school. That was what my dad did, so I just thought that's what I'll do.
Were you, I'd heard you, were you in a fraternity?
I was a frat guy, Lambda Chi Alpha.
Now that was the sort of, that was Lambda Chi, if my memory serves, in my head, the way that everything has a cinematic parallel, I always thought the Lambda Chi guys were like the Alpha Betas from Revenge of the Nerds. Like, weren't they the super cool girls always hanging out?
I'm trying to think of, I would say, okay, I thought you were saying
they were not the nerds. They were like the cool kids. I thought the
we were
Lambda
pretty
Chi,
cool.
I thought the Lambda Chi guys were like, girls always hung out at those parties, and girls would be like, Lambda Chi's are having a party tonight.
I mean, it doesn't sound like you're really putting down this, or the fraternity. It sounds like, you know, it's, I mean, it, yeah,
you're
guilty as charged.
Hearing
nice,
is bitterness
nice looking ladies
and
came
jealousy
to our parties. It is sometimes you feel a little embarrassed to admit that you were in a fraternity, but I had a wonderful time. It was I'm still really good friends with a lot of the guys. And yes, certainly there were some stereotypical fraternity guys in there, but there are some kind of stereotypical fraternity guys not in fraternities too.
That's true.
So it's like, you know, it's just like your family, you know, there are some weirdos in everybody's family. Also, so
I remember where that house wasn't Strathmore. What was that street?
It was right off Strathmore.
Was it Strathmore right off Daly? Like a couple houses in. I remember just from walking to campus and always seeing all these people having an amazing time hanging out the house. And
I barely left the house. I would I would get up each morning and sit out on the porch and eat these some kind of cereal. I just remember this bowl, this big bowl that I had, and I ate back then. I
flake
would eat
based or
probably
nut
three.
Based?
I would say usually like a nut based.
A nut based cereal. Okay.
Yeah. But the my portion sizes were so much more than I gained 45 pounds my freshman year.
Oh, shit.
Of just
the old like, freshman 45.
Yeah. I first of all could not be trusted at the dorm cafeteria because it's just like all you can eat food. I could not say no, and I didn't know anything. My mom, best mom in the world, but she did not teach us nutritional guidelines and stuff. So I didn't know, just I would have starch after starch after starch, and that was it. Like lunch would be tons of mashed potatoes, a bunch of macaroni and cheese.
Remember not to eat any protein, son.
Three desserts. Go get drunk that night, and then go get a full Burger King or Tommy's. Or the place. It was probably still there when you went there. It was a Mexican food place.
Los Panchos?
Baja
Fresh?
Right next, not Baja Fresh, but like Baja Cantina.
Taco?
It was just, you know what, right next to Tommy's, there's the other little stand there.
Yeah.
It was a Mexican place.
Oh, okay.
It was so good.
That became a sandwich shop. Tommy's was the place that made chili burgers. And it was I remember it, I'm sure they've cleaned it up, but I remember it being the dirtiest shack. Like it was barely not a homeless shelter.
I have no recollection of really ever being there ordering. It would just be like I'd be drunk by that point, and everything seemed clean at that point.
I just remember waking up the next morning being like, why does it feel like that someone has spackled my colon shut? And then looking and seeing the empty Tommy's box and the wrapper, I'm like, oh, that's right. At like 2:30, I was really hammered and had chili cheese fries and a chili burger.
It tasted so good.
So good. So you used to...
Did you ever have the breakfast burrito? It was at...
Headlines?
The big Tommy's. Big Tommy's. I don't even know if it's connected to Tommy's, but right by where Dee Dee Reese was. This is going to be a bummer of a podcast for people who did not go to UCLA.
And from 89 to 93.
Yeah, it had to be.
Not only is it geospecific, it's like space-time specific.
Yes.
Dee Dee Reese, I think, is still there.
Yeah. Right next to it, if you're looking at the front of Dee Dee Reese, right to the left of it was this was Tommy's, and it was just basically the same thing, just a bigger version of the shack.
God.
And they had this breakfast burrito that was that then once Tommy's turned into this Chinese restaurant, the breakfast burrito was so popular that they would serve still that breakfast burrito.
That's fantastic. I remember I was so broke in college that I could scrape together like $3.24 to get this. There was this place called Headlines, which was on Galey.
Oh, yeah.
It was like a burger joint, and they had this you're like burger and fries and a drink, and I'm like, I'm fucking splurging, like that was my splurge. And then I started using a fake ID further down toward Wilshire, this place called Los Panchos. Do you remember that place?
Oh, yeah, sure, sure.
There were. That's where I really learned
to drink. The upstairs place, right?
Yeah, which was clearly a money laundering operation.
Oh, yeah. Did you used to go, speaking of that, wasn't it, what's the place that was up in the building, like 10 stories up, 15 stories up? Like
the roof.
That was clearly mob run, whatever.
It was in that bank building.
Yeah.
And it was like a view of the city, like a round bar, restaurant bar. And it was super loungy.
Yeah.
And it did not look like college students in like tube socks and Birkenstocks should be up there.
Yeah.
But they didn't really check IDs.
Yeah.
Yeah, that place too. Oh, my God. It's not surprising that we never met because UCLA is so large.
Yeah.
But I remember, you know, when you first got an SNL, someone was like, he went to UCLA. I'm like, what? Really?
I knew way back because I was a big fan of yours when you started doing your show at MTV.
Really?
And, oh, yeah, yeah.
That's funny. That's funny that we never met. I don't think I really met you until like a year ago or a year and a half ago. And you used to – I guess if I had just walked by – if you just sat out on the Lambda Chi porch and just ate nut-based cereal,
I bet we walked past each other more than 10 times.
Probably.
In our, probably like 50 times.
But I'm sure you used to, but I'm sure that you were sitting out there and just watching girls walk to class at, you know, 8, 9, 10 in the morning.
Guys.
And guys, too. Sure. Sure.
You know, I'm not, I don't, with no sexual fascination of the guy part of it, but like, you know, it's good to, it's just, you know, it's a study in people.
It is.
Yeah.
Did you?
Yeah, check out their butts.
Sure. Because it's fine. You're studying people.
Yeah.
You say someday maybe I'll, well, at that point you were going to go into brokerage.
Yeah. It's very useful to.
So what was the character study then
guy's
for brokerage?
Butt is like
for brokerage?
At a brokerage for, what's that?
For brokerage? What were you studying for the brokerage?
Oh, I, you know, it, just. In terms of the...
In the character study, yeah.
Oh, just, you know, just like, just a man's gait,
mm-hmm.
you know, is helpful to know, like, you know, you put together their walking pace mm-hmm. with their expression and just everything. Just
yeah.
come on, good, lay off me on this. It's a healthy thing. Oh, my God, that just reminded me of this horrible thing that a couple of guys that were buddies of mine used to do right out on that street. They did this thing called poo dollar where they would take a dollar bill. It was just a dollar bill and they would use their own feces and wipe it on one side of a dollar bill.
No.
And then videotape people as they walked by to pick up this dollar bill and then their reaction once they realized that there was feces on the dollar bill.
Now I want to remind everyone this was pre-internet. This
yes.
was just a show in
yeah.
the...
This was not mine. This was, I knew these people who did it.
It was,
I swear, that I had no connection
to this. A viral video.
Did you see it?
I never
saw
it. Have
you heard of Poo Dollar?
I never saw it. And
but some then finally there was a person who kept the dollar. And it was like, wow.
Did people realize right away?
No, that was the interesting thing would be to see sometimes it's instant the discovery and sometimes it takes a while and you know lifting it up to see what that it was a horrible thing that these guys did and they should be ashamed of themselves.
Someone might have grabbed it quickly before anyone else saw and then stuffed it in their pocket, thereby ruining their pants and everything
yeah.
in their pocket.
And at that point, do you? Oh my God, that just reminded me of another poo related.
Please.
I apologize.
No, I'm listening.
Because I went to the Long Beach Grand Prix.
Mm-hmm.
This is kind of back in that era. And I was sitting at this table and we were at this bar, just a didn't seem like a, it wasn't a dive bar. It wasn't a super fancy bar, but just a regular bar. You would never expect something like this would happen. So I'm sitting at this table and I had this one shirt I used to wear all the time because I don't wear a lot of clothes. And I've got this one shirt that I really liked. It's this overshirt. So I'd wear a t-shirt and then this nice to me, fancy green shirt. And I just started smelling poo around me. And I just thought, did I step in something? I didn't. I wasn't quite sure. And then I realized that I lifted up my arm and there somebody had put, there was just poo on both both of the armrests of the chair, that somebody had somehow done that. And it was just all over the place. And I remember going into the bathroom and being very upset about this.
It's your favorite shirt.
And trying to clean the shirt off. And I kept the shirt. Like now I would just throw this thing away in a second. It could, like there's, even if it was like a fancy tuxedo that the president gave me, I would just have to throw it away. I got to throw it away.
Do you think that was karma for enjoying poo dollar? I mean, like, and that was the universe going, aha, it's not so funny when shit's on your favorite green overshirt.
I was originally, when you said that, I was going to say, I didn't enjoy poo dollar, but I kind of did. I mean, it's interesting. It's like, you know, staring at a guy's butt, you learn a lot from poo dollar.
Now to see how much cultural impact this podcast has, I'm curious to see if this will be a craze that now sweeps YouTube.
I don't pick up any money ever when I see it. I really don't.
I won't anymore.
Maybe change If it's a quarter and I'm by a parking
meter. If you see paper money on the ground, be suspicious.
Be very suspicious.
Something's up. You're going to get darted, like someone's going to hit you with a trank dart or there's shit on it or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or you're going to fall into a bear trap.
It just makes you realize, like, all these, this paper money that you carry around in your pocket, it's been through some stuff. These things have seen some, they've seen some things in their time.
And I'm always, I feel like a lot of times, you know, like you get a quarter that's just battle scarred. It's just dark black and there's shit all over it.
Yeah.
And
it probably is literally shit.
It might.
Poo quarter. It went through a poo quarter.
Nobody, listen, I wanted to make the game a little more relatable. So I took it into coins. I took it into coinage. Well, they play a poo toonie up in Canada where they shit on a $2 coin. And it's totally different because they have a coin-based currency. So they have to do it up there.
Yeah.
No one would pick up a 50 off the ground. That's just too, it's just too easy. it's so weird. That's so fucking weird. But I totally get why someone would do that.
Wait, where did you grow up?
Primarily in Memphis, Tennessee. And then, I moved to, in high school, I started high school in Memphis and then went through my junior in Denver and graduated in Los Angeles. So I was in L.A. Did you grow up in L.A.?
No, I was outside San Francisco.
Oh, okay.
It's called Lafayette.
Oh, nice, nice, yeah. Nice. Northern California. What made you decide to go to UCLA?
It was the best of the schools that I got into. To be honest, I was not excited to go to UCLA. I wanted to go to Berkeley.
Mm-hmm.
My dad went to Dartmouth. My dad was my hero, so I just wanted to do whatever he did. He went to Stanford Business School, and then Dartmouth for undergrad, and so I wanted to go to either Stanford or Dartmouth, and I had really good grades, so I thought I had a shot, but didn't get into either of those, didn't get into Berkeley. And UCLA, I'm so happy I went there now. I loved it. It was the best experience of my life, but for some reason, going into it, just wasn't that excited about it.
And also, as a California resident, it cost nothing to go there.
Oh my God, it was like $400 a quarter, right?
$400 a quarter, yeah, to go there. And if you were out of state, it was like 10 times that. It was some crazy amount, yeah, of money. But if you were...
Wait, what is it now? Do you know what it is per quarter?
I have
quarter?
No idea, but it's thousands of dollars.
Yeah,
like it's, yeah, not... It, the, those days are gone.
Oh,
my God. I'm sure it's still, I'm sure it's still comparatively cheap, but it's still expensive. I mean,
yeah.
It's a lot of money.
Yeah.
I really liked it too. It was a cool place.
I've only spent one day and even less than a day in Memphis. I went on this big road trip with a buddy in 1996 and we went to Graceland. So that was it. We just drove through, went to Graceland, then took off. But I really wish that we had stayed a couple days or even just one night to go down to, what is it? Beale Street.
Yeah.
Is that cool? Would that have been a cool thing to do?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it is. If you know, if you're only in town for one day, I would say, you know, you want to hit Beale Street and you want to hit, Graceland. I was always underwhelmed by. I guess the coolest part.
I loved it. I was okay with it.
I guess you're just like, oh yeah, Elvis lived here. You know, like that part, yeah, of it. You know, but in general, it was just. They herd you around like cattle, and you got to get in that bus and go up there, and you can barely move because, yeah, the tour moves really slowly, and you're scrunched into people, and you're like, wow, three TVs in the media room, and then his supposed grave, which I don't know if he's buried there or not, and then that's,
oh really, you think where do you think he is?
I don't know if his body is there. I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know. I'm not sure. And also Graceland's in sort of a killy part of town, like it's not in the best part of town. Beale Street's nice, but then I would also, like, if you're in the South, this might sound weird, go to like a Civil War cemetery, like go to a really old cemetery.
Yeah,
because it just seeing, like, you know, seeing headstones that, and of course people overseas laugh at us when I'm like, some of them go back to the 1800s, but it is an interesting, you know, like you just get a nice piece of heritage by going to like a really good Civil, yeah, War cemetery.
Then I just went to,
that's it. No,
keep going.
And then barbecue, and then that was it.
I just went to Monticello, and I know that's different than a Civil War cemetery, but just to be at Thomas Jefferson's home was really cool. And to see all the inventions. Have you ever been there?
Yeah. When I was a kid, my parents took me there. Yeah. I haven't been recently.
It was really cool. He did all these, God, I have the worst memory. And I was just there like 3 weeks ago. What was the thing? He had this, as you walk in the door, there is a clock that was also, there was a component to it where it would tell you what day it was too. And it was these weird balls on strings that would, as the clock, as the week went by, the ball would lower into the next little slot, which, you know, it had like Monday, Tuesday,
Wednesday. Oh, that's really cool.
I guess people who are listening can't see my hands. They're descending, descending down a wall.
It's descending vertically. Yeah. And then
and this machine that he had, so it was like a like an early Xerox where he would write something, and then there was this other pen that was attached to it that would be writing also at the same time, so he could write two letters at once. He could have a duplicate.
Well, that was that the mimeograph, or am I thinking of a different machine? It's a something graph.
Yeah, no. I forget the name of it, but it's
the Thomas Jefferson graph.
Yeah,
but no, that wasn't it.
And just to think about all the history there, and I guess James Madison, James Monroe used to come out and hang around, and General Lafayette. Unless I'm crazy.
Do you ever just sort of get tripped out by the fact that they were just dudes and like, oh yeah, he took a shit over there and then just sat in the corner of the room one day and got bored. Like, just think about all the mundane, like, as amazing as it is, like, but he was just a guy and he had mundane activities. They played Pooh Dollar. Well, James Madison's going to go for the dollar. He can't help it. Damn you, Jefferson! You son of a goat!
It is true. I do think about that stuff. I do. There's more attached to that, and I'm going to keep it inside.
How do you go from so 2 years at a brokerage firm? By the way, since your dad was your hero, was that hard to go, I don't want to do this anymore?
No, it was. In fact, it made me realize how much that wasn't for me. Just like, oh, okay, I gave it a shot. It did not feel right at all. I kept waking up every morning. You feel like there's this tightness, and it's almost like you're lugging around a cement block inside your body.
Yeah.
And then as soon as I went to the Groundlings, that was where I started doing comedy. It just, everything was lifted, and my dad and mom could not have been more supportive. I was really nervous to tell them, and they were really happy that I was going to give it a try.
It's really interesting that whenever you meet someone who does not grow up in comedy, and then they sort of, I guess maybe it's a little different because of the internet now, but, and they always sort of feel a little weird and out of place, and then they find like a comedy tribe and they're like, oh fuck, I'm a part of a thing, and there's other people who do this, who think this way.
Yeah.
It's such an interesting, I found that when I discovered the comedy club at UCLA. I'm like, oh my God, other people have these dumb thoughts and I'm not alone.
Wait, so what would that be? What was the comedy club at UCLA?
We used to meet up in Ackerman Union on Wednesday nights.
Like, and would it be like an open mic night there?
No, it was just there was a show at the Cooperage on Tuesday nights. I think there was a comedy show.
Okay.
But we were just a group of guys, and we would meet, and then we would, you know, go around the table and help each other flesh out material that we had written from the previous week. And then once or twice a quarter, we would go perform at like Dykstra Hall or Sproul or something and do the dorm shows. And then once a year, venture out and, you know, like, I don't know, like do a book a room at the, there was an improv in Santa Monica at the time, like an improv comedy club.
Okay.
And so we'd, you know, rent out the upper, there was a loft part that was a small little performance space. And so we, once a year we'd go do that, and that was a big deal. So yeah, it was just a group of guys.
Would a lot of people go in to the dorms? Would a lot of people show up at the shows?
Yeah, because, you know, a lot of people were just studying, and, you know, we'd put flyers up in the dorm, we're going to have a show this Friday. So all they literally had to do was come down the elevator and just sit in their rec room.
Yeah.
And so they would, yeah, the people would come to the shows.
And are there people that you met back then who are still doing it?
Yeah, this guy, Steve Callahan, is the co-EP of Family Guy.
Oh, cool.
He was my orientation counselor, and he was the president of the comedy club when I joined. And then another guy named Pat Megan also writes on Family Guy and a couple other people. And then the class before me was Shane Black.
Oh, really?
Like, he was the comedy club group before me because he's a few years older.
Yeah.
It was like Shane Black and Ed Solomon and Chris Matheson, who wrote Bill and Ted's, and then Shane, and then just all, and it's this guy, this comic, Sully McCullough, and, you know. And so, and then they would do these dorm shows and would pay to have headliners, professional headliners, come in and headline the show. So as we would all open for them. And so we would get this notebook passed down as the president. I was the president of the comedy club after Steve, and it would have all these names of people who had performed. And it was like David Spade, just all these people before they made it big, but they were like slightly known comics.
Yeah.
So it was a really interesting bit of comedy history back then. So, but you didn't do any comedy in college, right?
Nothing. I didn't really do anything. I took a drama class in junior high school that was just, I mean, it was just basically doing those improv games.
Yeah.
Like really loose improv games. The machine game. I don't know if, have you played that one where it's just one person's going beep, beep,
and someone has to go
beep. Yeah, and then somebody comes and joins in, and soon it's just a bunch of people making these weird movements, mm-hmm. and but it's just teaching you to work together. It's all very basic stuff. And then I took my sophomore year of high school, I took a drama class and never did any plays or anything like that. But I was, I was always kind of weird, and all my friends were weird, and we would do comedy without really doing comedy.
Did you have a hard time fitting in with the I guess it sounds like you didn't, because I was the kind of weird that I would never have fit into that construct of like that fraternity house. I never would have. I would have been too fucking geeky, and I used to scare people away because I was such a comedy nerd that I just, they'd be like, he's performing. Like, I would juggle.
You should have come to Lambda Chi. We would have accepted you.
Never would have been accepted. Never would have been accepted.
No, I didn't. No, everyone was really nice. I definitely was probably the considered the weird guy of the fraternity, but everyone was okay with it.
It was an acceptable weirdness.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, everyone was kind of weird in their own way.
But it sounds like you were pretty comfortable with yourself. It's like if you had a good it sounds like you were pretty comfortable with yourself. So
in terms of just life?
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess so.
I mean,
I had a great, my family was so great. And I loved high school and didn't want to leave it. I didn't want to go to college. And then I went to college and I didn't want to leave that. Like every part of it was great. It was kind of like that. And that's what made me feel better about leaving SNL eventually, was I just realized, this is like high school and college, where you don't want to leave, but you know you have to. And it's just, you got to move on to the next step. And whatever is out there next, I'm sure I won't want to leave at some point. And then, it's a good thing to try new things. You just got to do it.
Were you there for 6 years?
8 years.
8 years?
Yeah.
Wow.
How dare you?
No, I'm so sorry. So at that point, to me, it seems like a pretty natural choice to go like, oh, I've been here 8 years. Am I going to be here for 6 years, more years? Like, you don't,
Yeah.
You have to move on. You have to shed that stuff to move on. I completely understand why you would want to leave after.
Yeah, I mean, I guess some people questioned, because the timing of it was weird, because I had just done MacGruber and it came out and just bombed. Like, nobody saw it. And then like a month later, I said like, yeah, I guess maybe I'm going to go back. But most people would go like, oh, if you clearly don't have any kind of prospects of a movie.
So it's
career,
not like it's so in your mind.
Hang
it's not
on
like,
to that job with
like
everything
you made
you
Wayne's
got.
World, and they were like, "Oh yeah, well he's going to go off and
yeah,
do big."
Yeah, no, this was it was a questionable decision, but it had very little to do with all that stuff. It was more just family being out here and wanting to get out here. And the good thing is that before I went to SNL, I was a writer for a long time and so I knew it's a crapshoot whenever you leave SNL. So you just never know what's out there for you. So if everything dries up acting wise, I'll just go back to writing, which I love doing. I love writing. So
well, you developed a really strong voice on the show. And I always, I always looked forward to like, oh, this is a Will Forte thing. Like this is going to be some surreal kind of a thing that doesn't really rely on any kind of pop culture reference. It's just its own kind of thing that's going to be really weird that I'm going to love.
Thank you very much.
So I always looked forward to that stuff because it was, and I feel like. It feels like they gave you a lot of room to experiment with that kind of, I mean, like, did you have any trouble pitching some of the weirder stuff, or did that at a certain point did they just go, we'll just let Will do what Will does?
I mean, the trickiest thing is when you start out there, you'll put up things that will go well at the table, but Lorne is very protective of, you know, he wants to get you out there in the right way, and so you'd get a lot of, what, you know, we're not going to do that this week. People need to get to know you a little bit better before they are subjected to this. And, you know, just wait, because at some point, like, as they get to know you a little better, they'll be ready for that. And it's hard to wait, but I think it's, you know, you would tell yourself, no, if they see this, they'll like it. But I think Lauren's a very smart guy and knows what he's doing and you know, and it was true. Like years as I was there for the longer I was there, the more you would get the benefit of the doubt, and then he would, you know, take a chance on some weird stuff that you would put up at the table. But there are definitely some ones that I put up early on that didn't get on that I wish had gotten on, but in hindsight, they probably wouldn't have. I don't know. Who knows? You'll never know. But it definitely. He's really good about protecting you, and he's great. I really have nothing but the most highest respect for him.
What was there anything that you never got to do that you always wanted to do, or just one there, that you try? What is it?
Oh yes, there's one that's this thing called Benjamin Franklin, which was. I put it up so many times. It's like at SNL, you at the table read, you can put up something once, and if it goes well, you can maybe put it up a second time. But I must have put up Benjamin Franklin 6 times, and they just would never, they just never let me do it. And I have a great relationship with Seth Meyers. We're really good buddies, but we will still have this really fun argument. About Benjamin Franklin. So we have there's actually a plan now when he starts his late night show. If I come on as a guest, we're going to discuss the argument about Benjamin Franklin, and he's going to let me perform it for the first time. So I'm really excited and also really nervous because I have given him so much shit about not letting us try it. I mean, it's, you know, it's Lauren's call about that stuff most of the time. But if it just sucks, it's going to be a painful pill to swallow.
Did it ever get to the point where you're like, I have an idea. It's not Benjamin Franklin, is it? No. Okay, go ahead. So Benjamin Franklin is in a submarine. No!
It's Benjamin Danklin.
It's totally different thing. Totally different thing. Do you want to say what the premise is, or do you want to save it for Seth's show?
It's essentially just this guy comes to he's being set up on a blind date by these two people who met this woman that shares the same interests as him. They're really into, like, you know, colonial period stuff. And she shows up and she's just the spitting image of Benjamin Franklin, but very sexual. And things get... So it's... I love it. I
can't believe they didn't let you try that once.
I know, just once.
One time.
Just even go to the dress rehearsal once and see.
Time in the last half hour of the show.
Yeah.
Like one time.
They, in their defense, they have let me try a ton of stuff that did not work at all. So, like, you know, but this, for some reason, this was the one that really I'll always remember. I don't want to, you know, I want to make sure I say they were so good to me. Lauren was so good to me. I you know, I had such a great time at the show. It was hard to leave.
Just not Benjamin Franklin good.
Yeah,
they were good to you.
Yeah, that would have, there was one thing that kept my experience there from being perfect, and that was it.
Do you still, after all these years, have you perfected the sketch? Like, do you still go back to it?
Oh, no. Oh, Benjamin Franklin?
Yeah.
It was perfect from the very beginning. It did get a little bit better each time you find little teeny things, because you can't, if you put it up a second time at the table read, you have to do some new moves. So we would insert some stuff, but it's ready to go.
Are you Benjamin Franklin, or do you play the
date? We would play it in different ways, because we did it a couple of times at first where I was Benjamin Franklin, and then we realized, oh, what we need to do is get the host to be Benjamin Franklin, so then they have this big meaty part, because the other part's really fun too, because it's this guy who's kind of into this woman he shouldn't be into at all. It's just like the colonial aspect of it is not a big enough carrot. There are two fun parts. Actually, all the parts are fun. It's a perfectly written sketch. I mean, it's perfect.
So who do you see? Who do you see embodying the perfect Benjamin Franklin? Is it someone like Paul Giamatti, or is it someone, or is it an actual sexy woman that you've made?
Well,
their face
I would like to
head?
Go back and be. I would like to be Benjamin Franklin.
Okay, so you are Benjamin Franklin.
That, I mean, I don't know that I would make the perfect Benjamin Franklin, but that's. That's that now in the incarnation, I have to do it just to get this out of my, you know, the one that we eventually do on Seth's show. If he goes through with this, which he sounds really excited about. I mean, it's been so much fun. We talk about it all the time, but I think I would have to do that. I can't remember. I think Brian Williams might have been the other person once. And who else? I think we might have tried to get Christopher Walken to be the guy. I mean, at a certain point, he's asking me to dance. And
can I pitch something, which is beating the joke to death? But I can't help it. I just envision. I think you should shoot a short setup for this video. Seth should let you shoot this short setup, which is essentially like the plot of Mr. Holland's Opus, where you've been trying to get this one sketch done, and life keeps getting in the way. And so finally, at the end, they present it to you, like everyone just presents it to you, like this was the culmination of your life's work that you never got to finish, and they make it a huge, huge, huge deal.
So at the end, there should also be a little end film where I'm an old man on my like surrounded by my family,
yep.
And I get to see it finally,
yep.
Played, and then I die,
and then you expire,
with a smile, yeah. On my face,
and then they shut your eyes, and then they put the Benjamin Franklin head on you, and then they bury you as Benjamin Franklin. It'd be very unorthodox. They would bury you immediately, so you're not gonna get.
Or wait a second,
what?
Or it's just me as an old man. And then a doctor comes in and takes a scalpel down my face and removes a layer of skin, and I've been Benjamin Franklin the whole time.
The entire time.
Me. Yeah.
That is the Will Forte touch that the sketch needed. That no. is exactly what the sketch
That's
needed.
That's workshopping. No. Nope. That is what you... It was.
I am telling you, this is a good idea, and it should end that way. And if it takes 30 minutes of Seth's show, you have got to make sure that this gets done. What are you going to do? Sit on the couch?
First show,
and,
right?
Yeah.
Hey,
you're
I
the
know
guest.
You got Amy Poehler coming on, but why don't you just save that for the second show, and let's get this Benjamin Franklin. Let's
Come
get
on,
this,
man.
This Seth Meyers late night show off to a. A bang.
Let people know that this is what they can expect every yeah. episode. Yes. It's just a 30-minute long sketch. I'm excited to see what he does with that show.
I think he's going to be great.
He's a brilliant guy.
Yeah.
Really, really insanely smart guy.
Very, very, very smart. So fast. Like, you know, it's I think it's clear from people who see him on Update how fast he is. You know, to see him in the writer's room and to go in with a sketch that might not be working, and he just very quickly has the fix on it, and he's so smart and fast, and he's also a really pleasant and fun guy, and I think he's just going to be really good at talking to people also in the interviews, so
yeah.
So I think it's going to be a great show.
When you did leave SNL, was there any sort of a plan, or were you like, well, I'm just going to move out and we'll just see?
There was no plan at all. I mean, the the business part of the plan was just like, hey, look, you it's time to try new stuff, you know, like and I understood like my agent manager, they were saying, you know, it's 8 years is a long time. You know, let's, you know, it's time to try new stuff. And that made sense. Like, but really that was not as big a part of leaving as the other more personal stuff. You know, I just turned 40, still, you know, unmarried and no kids. I always thought that was going to come really, really early. and still now I'm 43. It's 3 years later. So same scenario. So
did turning 40 freak you out?
What's that?
Did it turning 40 freak you out?
No, not at all. Yeah. I mean, yeah. I mean, there were parts of me that were, you know, this weird ticking clock that you don't, that people go, oh, men shouldn't have that. But yeah, I mean, they were part of it. It was, my sister started having kids, and to me, that's what life is all about, the family stuff. Not the, you know, I love getting to do this acting and writing and all that is wonderful, but that's, you know, that's just a blessing and gravy on top of family stuff. Family stuff is where it's at. So like, so it was weird to, you know, I would love that aspect of life to get going, but I just haven't. So my profile at Match.com.
Match.com.
Is...
It's just Will Forte.
Checks out dudes' butts.
For brokerage firm research purposes, to be fair.
But into women.
Yes, I am into women. Yes, 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 yes. Vagina's a plus?
Yeah. But not a necessity.
And for kids, yeah, you know, it's if you want to impregnate someone, I guess if you want to impregnate someone.
It is a necessity.
You could adopt, though. You could find a nice gentleman and adopt someone.
That is true. That is true.
You could totally do that.
That's true. At this point, I'm just going to open up the field. Just whatever.
Any of the prospects are going to... What do you think it is that sort of kept you... If you don't want to talk about it, you don't have to. But what do you think it is that sort of kept you from like, now I'm just going to settle down and find someone?
I don't know what it is. You know, I think a part of it is I got some OCD tendencies. I'm not like a full blown OCD, but I got enough of it, and I think, but the older I get, the more I realize how much that stuff has affected me, and I think that it plays with, like, I think it's affected some of my previous relationships. You know, my parents split up too. I'm sure that's rolling around in there somewhere. I don't know what it is. What? You know, it's I'm constantly learning. I feel like I'm evolving as a person. I'm getting, you know, I feel closer to being ready to do that kind of stuff than ever, I guess.
But it's very funny.
I don't know why I feel that. It's
that our parents' generation, by the time you were 40, it was like, what the fuck are you doing? You know, like it was unheard of. Unheard of.
Yeah.
You know, like I was already 10 by the time my dad was 40.
Yeah.
And 15 by the time my mom was 40. And I remember that very, very clearly. So it seems very, you know, like I do feel that strange, like, oh yeah, they were. And even they were, you know, my dad at 30 was still a little behind the curve.
Yeah.
You know? So yeah. It was strange. It's strange now.
Most of my friends are, who are my age, are not married yet. It's crazy. Are you married?
No. No. I have a girlfriend. I've been with the same girl for two-ish years.
It's time, my friend.
All my, I think a lot of my friend, well... I guess it's tough to say. I do have a lot of friends who have kids and are on their second kids, and yeah. And, but then I also have
I do too. I do have a lot of, but like my best buddies down here in Los Angeles are still single. But well, I mean, some of them, I feel like some of them are getting close now.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, 43. We're all 43.
Yeah,
it's about time.
I just turned 42. Yeah, yeah. So it's. It is 40 didn't freak me out that much, but 38 freaked me out because 38 was like 40's almost there. What is happening?
But it's good that it happened there because then you got it out of the way so that by the time you turned 40, you was like,
yeah,
prepared, right?
That's true. Yeah, in a lot of cases, yeah, it still eats away at me a little bit because I sort of feel like, you know, time is this kind of like tight sweater that just keeps getting tighter, and you're like, oh, I just need a little more room, you know?
I know. Oh my God, it is. Yeah. It is.
Just tugging on it.
Yeah, yeah. It is really interesting to think about, like I just how fast it goes by, and checking in on my parents were this age when they did this and all that stuff, and then you know, my parents are both 70 now, and they're in very good shape for being 70. But that, you know, 70, you're starting to get kind of old.
That's,
it doesn't feel as old as it did like 20 years ago. 70 seemed like, you know, well, why are you still even walking around? You should be standing, you know, for your family, you should be near some kind of, you know, crematorium or something. Because
just
you're,
in case.
Yeah, just to make it easier for them. But like, yeah, now I look at my own parents who are, my dad skis every day of his life. My grandpa, who's 95, he skied, I think, till he was like 89. So I hope that I take after them. But it is interesting to go, God, I have to take after them if I want to enjoy any kids in my life, because I'm really pushing the limit.
You better,
you know,
live a long time.
If I want grandkids, if they're on my path,
yeah,
I'll have to live to be like 120.
Or you just encourage your own children to not use protection. Just be like the anti-parent. Like, just, it feels a lot better if you don't put that thing on. Just do it that way.
No, he's great. Once he gets out of jail, he's your soulmate. Come on.
That's fine.
Yeah.
Well, it is. 40s, that period is sort of the transition from, or at least for me anyway, of when you're younger and you're sort of like, oh, I got all the runway in the world. Like, life's an infinitely expanding universe. And then you start getting to that. And then at the 40s, you're like, oh, I'll just do this thing later. And you're like, well, how much time later is there really? You know, like, start asking those, like, it's the talk back from my brain. Like, I'll just do that later. But how much time really do you? Oh, shit. Yeah, I guess you're right. I should just do these things. Now is the time.
I'm going to go to Japan instead of spending Christmas with my family. You just made me realize.
They know what you look like.
Every year. I'm going to go to Japan.
Go to Japan. Get some underwear and a vending machine.
Have you gone there? Have you been there?
No, I've been dying.
Let's go to Japan together.
Let's go to Japan. Japanese trip. We'll go have a Japanese Christmas. I bet that would be really fun.
Impregnate some ladies over there.
My girlfriend won't mind.
Let's get it all going right
now.
She'll
be happy that it's because she loves anime, so she'll think it's cool.
Jeez.
Honey, I impregnated the Japanese, you know. Oh, was she dressed like a schoolgirl? Well, of course. We're anime fanatics. Oh, well, then it's fine. You know, like, that's what's supposed to happen. Did you turn into tentacles? Yes, I did. I put on the tentacles. It is... I'm not freaking out about it, but I definitely feel it. I just feel it, you know? I just know it's there.
Yeah.
And then...
We are talking about death.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. Well, okay. I mean, just the getting older. Like,
oh, yeah.
Just,
yeah, yeah.
Not even... Yeah, death doesn't freak me out as much as just, like, the older thing. Like, when you get in a room full of white hairs, and you're like, look at these dumb old people, and you're like, in, like, 25 years, or maybe less, you know? Like, And I'm sure I'll think I'm cool and hanging out with the kids, but they won't want me around because they don't get my references and I smell weird because I'm older. And that's what happens.
Wait, so let me ask you this. Back to your philosophy major.
Mm-hmm.
You probably think way differently about death because of your knowledge of philosophy, I would think, right? You must have a very evolved... I don't know, but evolve might not be the right word, but like, how does that make you feel moving towards it?
I don't really have a, I don't know if there's anything philosophical that I feel like, this comforts me. I just sort of feel like, well, that's it. You know, like, and for some reason I'm just okay with that.
Yeah.
Like just going, yeah, that's probably it. You know, I didn't know what it was like to not be alive before. I probably won't really know what it's like. You know, it doesn't really bother me.
Yeah. Not particularly religious.
No. And I don't really have anything against it. I just don't really, you know, there isn't anything about it where I'm like, yeah, that really makes a lot of sense to me. You know, like there isn't anything that I really bond with.
Yeah.
I like to think that the universe is this big science-y machine that we don't understand, and that there are probably moving parts that we don't know because we just know a tiny infinitesimal fraction of what's going on. But that's about it, you know. But I don't really. For me, it really is just like the old thing freaks me out. I don't want to die young, but I don't want to be old, you know.
God, that's a part of it that I don't really ever think about. That you are probably going to kickstart me into thinking about that now.
Have I ruined the rest of your life now?
No. Or maybe it's going to be good for me to think about this.
Why I think it's going to be okay is because no matter what age you're at, you always feel like, oh, I'm so old. I remember when I turned 25 and I was like, oh, I'm a quarter of a century old. It's all downhill from here.
Yeah.
And then I was 35. I was like, wow, 25 was not really and my dad died when he was 72 and he was really happy.
Burn.
He was really happy and made me feel like, oh, it's not, you know. I mean, I would meet people after I'd turned 30 who were in their 20s, and they'd be like, when I turn 30, it's all over, man. And then you sort of realize, like, I didn't even really start to know who I was until I was 30. And 40, so much more comfortable than I was when I was 30. So, you know, I think if I were to snap my fingers and just be 70 right now, it would suck. But there's a lot in between here and there that it's like I'm not just jumping into ice cold water. It's like, you know, you get all those experiences in between. So that's why I kind of feel like it'll probably be okay.
No, I agree. I feel like I am I guess everybody should be the most evolved version of themselves at whatever age they are.
Yeah.
Like you're constantly moving towards it. I just wish it was in a younger body.
Please, science. Please perfect the idea.
You hear that. You hear about like how science is just going to be, you know, there's the lifespan of people. I mean, soon people just live forever. It's, you know, with organ harvesting we are going to be part of one of the last generations, probably.
I think we're going to just miss it.
But in a weird, I feel like it's going to be, it's going to be weird to live forever.
Well,
I wish we had some vampires who could be talking.
Just one or two vampires is all. All we would need is like one or two vampires, and not freshly turned vampires, but like dawn of time vampires.
It's going to get very crowded.
It will.
Yeah. I like the space we have right now. So,
you know,
looking at the bright side, right?
Let me tell you something. When you drive across America, you're like, what the fuck? We have tons of space.
Yeah.
You know, just move the corn into the cloud. It's like, let's create sky farming. Like, we'll just hover. We'll just levitate. If we can make people live forever, we can grow sky corn. You know what I mean? Like that. Well, there's plenty of fucking space for everyone. The country is clustered so much. It's like, oh, it's so crowded. Yeah, because everyone lives on the coast, you know? Like, if you move to the middle of the country, there's goddamn thousands.
Just going up from on the 5 up to from L.A. to San Francisco.
Yeah.
A lot of area there for people.
We could just move to Gilroy.
Yeah.
There's plenty of room in Gilroy.
Heavy garlic diets.
They love
there, which
the
would be
garlic
very good
festival
for your heart.
Yes, that would keep it not good if you're a vampire.
Yes. Yeah.
But if you're just a human living forever.
Yes.
All the garlic you could ever want. How do you feel about it? Are you particularly religious-y about stuff?
I was raised Catholic. I don't know what I am now. I guess my mom is she was also Catholic and is more just generally spiritual now, and I don't know. I'm in that space where I am never gonna poo-poo anything because I just don't know. Who knows what's right? I'm just kind of hanging around, open to anything. Nothing has really caught me yet. But in terms of how I view death, it's I'm not excited about it. But I do also realize I go, every single person who has ever lived is has done it.
Yeah.
It's like, you just got to do it.
Everyone's doing it, man.
Yeah, and I'm going to do it.
I'm going to be a conformist.
Yeah.
I'm just going to conform to it.
But it just makes you realize how it's just, it's so out of your hands.
Oh, yeah.
It's so out of, you know.
So much of what I think we feel like we, you know, and honestly, just sort of spinning it around to the OCD talk, so much of it is trying to grasp for control in a world where we largely do not have control.
Oh, yeah.
And I think, you know, I mean, I think a lot of religion is probably very OCD based of like, I have to perform these rituals so that the monsters don't come. You
yeah.
know? So, it, you know, basically we all, I think that's just a byproduct of our brain trying to parse out something which doesn't compute, which is that we don't really have control over anything.
Yeah.
Is that how yours expresses itself? Do you feel like?
Yeah. I mean, I think there's a lot of truth to what you just said. I just had this thought in my head of something that was going through my head the other day. I used head a lot in that last sentence. I'm sorry.
No, please. Do you want to share?
But I was, because my place is, I bought this place 11 years ago in Santa Monica, 2 weeks before getting the SNL job. And so I basically had to move to New York when I had just bought this house and didn't really move any furniture in, I had a bed, I had this, and then I kept saying, okay, I'm going to wait because I want to do a couple things to the house, but I just never had time. And so it's still kind of largely unfurnished.
After 11 years?
11 years later. Because then it became this thing like, oh, I want to get the upstairs redone, so I'll just wait till after that. And now finally I'm starting to do that, but there are still just piles of things. I'm kind of a reformed pack rat, so mm-hmm. I'm trying to go through this stuff. And I just had this horrible thought the other day that, oh, I'm going to, like, all these, I have to at least furnish my house before I die. Like, this is, it's been 11 years. And I have stuff in there. But this front room that I have is just a little bit of placeholder furniture, and then no rugs. There might be. I finally took a huge step and put a picture up on the wall, like a year ago.
That's so funny.
Because I just couldn't. I couldn't decide. Like, oh, where do I put? Which I didn't want to commit to having a picture in a place that I might think was later was the wrong place for it.
This is eerily. I think it's sort of funny. Well, it's not funny, but would you say that the way that you deal with your home is effectively sort of a metaphor for how you deal with the rest of your life?
Oh,
so
yeah.
If you're saying like
relationships.
Like relationships. If we're
sure.
afraid to commit to a picture, afraid to do this, afraid to finish it, not really sure. It's really interesting.
Well, it's so weird because there definitely, absolutely, what I've learned is that that is the case. But then there's also the part of the OCD that is hyper focus. When I have job stuff, I just dig into it and go nuts, and I ignore everything else until everything's done. Like if I get started on a jigsaw puzzle. And that's not work, but I just need to complete that. I can't stop until it's done. So I would think that would go, oh, if I focus on this relationship stuff, just work on it until it's done, you know? But I guess it's not really like that. I'm also not crazy. I'm not a crazy person, so I know that you can't really do that.
And there is no done, really.
There is no done.
But I would liken that a little bit to why I've never watched The Wire, to your puzzle analogy, not so much the relationship analogy, where I go, well, if I start this thing, I know it's going to consume a very large portion of my life until I'm finished with it.
Yeah.
And I'm not ready to do that. I'm not ready to do that yet.
How many seasons?
Seven.
Seven and
it's like
how
seven,
many
right?
episodes?
I don't know, if seven, what, how many, 13, there's got to be like 70 episodes, maybe almost 80 episodes. How many episodes of The Wire, Katie? Somewhere between 70 and 80.
Well, it's four seasons.
Four seasons?
Five seasons.
I thought it was seven.
That's five.
Five seasons?
Wasn't it?
That's doable.
If only there was some.
Started tonight.
Oh, shit, don't do that to me. Don't do that to me.
I didn't say anything.
What? Did you hear that? I just feel like there was this voice that was saying I should start The Wire tonight. Is that The Wire talking? The Wire has become sentient.
Yeah, 5 seasons, 60 episodes.
60 episodes. Okay. 12 episodes a season, 60 episodes. Okay, 5. Still a lot. Still a lot. 60 episodes is
that is a lot.
Is a lot.
Yeah.
When I did the Breaking Bad after show, I rewatched the entire series up to that point, and that was like 49 episodes or something, and I loved it, but it does, like, every free moment, like, okay, I'm going to watch this now. I mean, it really does take a lot. It's a commitment.
That's the one show that I did. I started in probably as the fourth season was just starting. That was when I started watching it and just went nuts on it. It was such a great show, and I didn't get to see you were at the Hollywood Forever Cemetery, right? I was going to come that night, but I hadn't finished it yet, so.
God, you're a guy Vince, I feel like you could have popped up on that show. Vince loved, like, really smart, funny people on that show. Like, there were so many comedians on that show playing. Well, now you get, I mean.
I don't know him super well, but I've met him twice or maybe three times, Vince Gilligan.
Yeah.
And what a tremendously awesome,
guy.
So great.
Just so warm. And
did you know him before that? Or
no, I didn't know him until that show, and then we hung out a bit, and just such a, I mean, like, he's such a sweet guy that you would never go, this guy created one of the greatest television shows in television history, and it would have this super dark arc to it. Like, he's such a sweet, you know, like, what's that guy do? Is he?
And so is Bryan Cranston. God, they're
so
they're,
nice.
And Aaron Paul,
it's
all
the best
those guys.
Yeah, yeah,
they're just wonderful.
The absolute best, because, like, you know, Aaron Paul, that guy has won Emmys. He could have totally, if he were a douchebag, people would be like, well, it sucks, but I get it. And yet, he's out there, like, in the crowds with the fans, like, raising money for charity, and he knows that people want to hear him say, magnets, bitch, and so he does it, and he takes the pictures, and, like, he's just, you can tell that they all care about the community of the show. Like, they care about it as much as we care about it.
Yeah.
Which is fucking amazing.
Yeah.
But now, I haven't seen Nebraska yet, but I will see it, and I've heard nothing but amazing things about it and your performance in it.
Oh, thank you.
Is that, that's got to be super, I mean, like, to be able to show a different, you know?
It has been the most exciting thing, because you just, I don't know how to express it very, very clearly, which is weird because I've been for the last 2 months doing
nothing but talking
answering
about
questions
Nebraska.
About this. So I should have a more concise way to put this, but you just think you know where you're heading. You know, you did it. I would have never expected that somebody would give me a chance to do this. I'm so appreciative to Alexander Payne because I just not a lot of people would have given me a chance to do something like this, you know, and it was just, he's an amazing guy who will, I just am very appreciative. So it's been so much fun. Every part of it has just been exciting and kind of terrifying but just wonderful.
He's a guy that's pretty masterful at exposing sides of performers that you didn't really know before. Like, he sees things, and he seems to really see things in people and carves out, like, did you ever see Parisia Tem, that the series?
Oh, I didn't see that, but I have heard that his is awesome.
I mean, you know, they're all fun, and, you know, a couple of them are like meh, but his, it just, you watch it and you just tears. It's such a beautiful. It's Margot
Martindale.
Is it Margot Martindale?
Yeah, I haven't seen it, but I remember him talking.
Oh my God, it's short, so you don't have to watch the rest of Preachers. You could just watch his. It's like 10 minutes long, but he does such an incredible job at just flipping over a rock and then just showing you something really beautiful. This is a bad way to describe this, but I don't it. So I'm really excited to see your movie.
I'm excited for you to see it. I should have brought a screener for you.
Fuck, bro. Why didn't you fucking bring a screener for your bros? You got a bunch of bros here.
I thought you had seen it.
Oh, shit.
I thought you'd seen it,
Are you
bro.
Trying to out-bro well, me
only
right
been,
now?
It's only been in the theaters here for 5 weeks.
I have not been in a movie theater in so
no,
long.
No, I know. I'm the same way. I do not watch movies hardly ever.
I went to a movie theater Sunday because it was Captain EO and I was at Disneyland. And I was with a group of people that had not seen Captain EO.
Oh, really?
I warned them that it doesn't hold up, and they were still floored by how much it does not hold up. And the other ones were like, what the fuck? And I go, I know I told you this, but it's probably not going to be here for much longer, so you have to see it now.
That is... Oh, you think they're going to get rid of it?
Probably. I mean, how long can it be there? The theater was not full. Like, it was not a hard ride to get into, attraction. But, yeah, that was the last... I find that, I just don't... Like, oh, I got to do the theater, but I got to do this thing, and I got to go park, and then goes... I mean, like, it's dumb math that I'm doing in my head. Of course I could carve time to go out and see it, but...
No, I know exactly what you mean. I never have the time, but then I realize I spend so much time... I waste so much time doing, like, the amount of time that I spend on the internet doing... I should be returning emails, because I feel very guilty for not returning emails. So it would make me feel so much better if I just spent that time returning emails instead of just going down the little
internet rabbit holes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think that it's a good lesson that you're 43 and you've done this movie, which is this whole new chapter in your career. And when you were 25, you'd probably be like, 43? God damn it. What porch am I going to be rocking on at 43? Who's going to want me then? Fuck 43. And then here you are. This is exactly proof that at 60 or 70 or maybe even 80, and then maybe it gets a little dicey, but that life can still be surprising and fun and good and fulfilling.
No, I absolutely agree. Like, I started SNL when I was relatively old, you know, 30, 32. I hadn't been acting. I had just been writing. So to get to do that, and that was my dream job. So I didn't expect anything else. I mean, this is something I would have hoped for, but just never. This would have been too crazy a thing to even put on a dream wish list, you know. So it was very exciting, and I think about the same thing for Bruce. It's so exciting because he's such an amazing actor, and to get a role like this at the age of 77, it's so amazing. You know, I really hope people give him, you know, this guy should have been getting roles like this for, you know, all the time. So it's really exciting for him that, you know, to be getting recognized for what an amazing job. You'll see, he's so good in this movie. He's so good, and I've always really, really loved him because he's such an interesting actor. He's always, he's just very interesting in everything he's ever done. I can't help but gravitate towards him. So he's so different in this than anything he's ever done, and it's just, I'm so happy that people are
you're gonna end up going to the Oscars next year. I mean, there's this movie. It just has, like, every element. You're like, oh, yeah, this is a thing. You know, first of all, it's a director that everyone loves. It does amazing work. The movie looks cool. It's a cool, quirky story. You're in it. No one's seen you do this kind of thing before, really. Bruce Dern is a guy that, like, oh, yeah. Like, it's sort of a, I don't want to say a comeback story because he's not like he ever really went away, but, like, a really... To come back to a movie like this, and this—I mean, like, this is the kind of thing.
Yeah, but I mean, he's been acting in a bunch of stuff, but not a role like this. Like, this is really like, this is a tour de force.
This is where the Academy is like, yes, let us give this guy a thing or this movie. Is that going to be weird? It's going to be weird to just go be like sitting at the Oscars and be like, oh, that's my fucking movie.
I, you know, who knows what happens?
I know.
But it, you know, I just am really rooting for Bruce because he's just so good in this movie, and he's become such a special part of my life. And I'm just, it's been so exciting how much recognition he's been getting because it's so deserved. So I hope it keeps going. I'm not going to jinx anything.
I've
seen there are a lot of amazing acting performances this year, but God, he's so good in this movie, and I just am tickled for him that people are you know, taking note of it.
Well, it's I'm excited to see. Are you working on anything else at the moment? Are you shooting anything at the moment?
No, it's just been I never realized how much you know, when I did MacGruber, we did like a 5-day stretch where we went to a different college town each night, and then a weekend of press at a press junket, and then a talk show or two. And this has just been so much traveling around to different, you know, months and months of doing regional visits and showing the movie and talking to press. I just never knew this level of promotion existed. So it's been exhilarating. It's been fun to, you know, I still can't believe I got to be in this movie. So it's exciting to go around and show it to people, but it's also exhausting. So but I'm, you know, absolutely that is, you know, I'm more than happy I just told them, you, whatever you want me to do, I'll do it. You know, I'm so thankful that you let me be in this movie.
Are you happy just being an actor? Do you want to like your next thing to be like, I want to write this thing and be in it?
I mean, the ideal would be to write something that you're in, but actually the older I get, the more I'm not having that control freak stuff. So I feel I'm learning to trust other people. So it's not as necessary for me. Before it was like, oh, I have to be in a situation where I get to control everything and I write it and I act and I get the editing decisions and you just, I don't know. It's not as important to me if I work with like Alexander Payne. How am I not going to trust every decision that guy makes? He's
Alex,
just amazing.
I have a couple of notes. I have a couple of suggestions.
Yeah. So I would love to write and I think it'd be really fun to direct something, but I'm, you know, that it's I got piles in my house that I got to sort through, and I got to, you know, furnish my house, and so there are a lot of things that I think should take priority over me worrying about this other stuff.
This summer, a stitch in time saves 9. She's tying that key to the kite. Audiences will be floored. Gingerman Franklin
was a stitch in. Wait. Say the a stitch in time.
A stitch in time saves 9. Yeah,
that was Benjamin Franklin.
Yeah, he put that in Poor Richard's Almanac.
I got to read Poor Richard's Almanac because there are so many things that man has, so many quotes and so many inventions and stuff. I know bifocal lenses, right?
Oh, it's fucking ridiculous when you're like, and I mean, part of it is that they were sort of like people needed things. It's like it'd be very hard now to create that stuff because you would really have to have knowledge of like really hardcore science to make anything. I mean, you would need like machines, and you know, back then, like, oh, it would be nice to be able to see far and near at the same time. Like he was just creating these things that the world just needed at that time. Oh, I'll just put these. Oh, look at this. It's a new thing.
He just took a hammer probably to a couple of pieces of the glass and just clink, clink.
Oh, it was probably goddamn boring for him at a certain point. Oh, yeah, this clock, you can see the days. I get it. I know. You know, like every fucking day he was probably, the world just needed so many things, and he was just a guy that did that, you know. Whereas Edison, like, had an army of people working for him. But Franklin was just like a guy. He was just a fucking guy.
So you're not a fan of Edison. You don't think he was a great man.
I think he was fine. I think Edison was fine. I think I think he was fine. But I think Franklin really was just a, you know, it seemed like a guy who could look in a room and go, oh, here's what you need. You need to put a leg right. I don't know if he talked that way. Let's just say that he did. In between, by the way, having sex with scores of ladies at the same time.
Did you see the John Adams miniseries that Paul Giamatti did?
Abigail. Yes, Abigail. Everything is spoken on the side.
I love that.
Yeah.
It was so great.
He was. And he probably invented bifocal so he could stare at the vagina in front of him and the ones walking way across the room. What?
Gross.
Or men's butts, too,
okay,
because it's all fine.
Okay, now you're talking my language.
Speaking the language. While he was, while he invented a nut cereal to eat on his front porch, he would have done that. Yes, so Benjamin Franklin coming to theaters next summer, directed by Michael Bay.
Ooh.
That sweetened the pot?
I wouldn't even have thought of him. I don't know who I would have thought for to direct it, but he seems like a good choice. Because I feel like I would make it real dialogue-y, and he would put some oomph into it.
And robots.
And I think it needs some oomph.
Benjamin Franklin needs some. I don't know how you would create massive explosions in colonial America, but
it doesn't have to be. It's not. This is not Benjamin Franklin. It's Benjamin.
Oh, so she's okay. Right. Right.
She
just looks
like him. I mean, she dresses like him also in like kind of
even easier
frocks, manly frocks. She does have the male pattern baldness also.
She has to.
Yeah. But big boobs.
Is she pear-shaped like Franklin?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, this is for a second, if you weren't wearing your glasses, you would think Benjamin Franklin just walked into the room.
You're like, look at the sweet cans on Benjamin Franklin.
Yes.
No, that's Benjamin Franklin. I love this idea. This has been a really, really great chat. We talked for almost an hour and a half.
Are you serious?
Yeah. Yeah. It was a fucking good chat,
we
man.
We did it. It was nice. It was nice hanging out.
I ran into you like a year and a half ago. I was like, oh, you know, I'd love to have you on the podcast. And you're like, yeah, I would love to. And then schedules and it just gets hard and so on. But I'm glad that it finally worked out.
Oh, yeah. I remember we were down at the...
The GE building,
yeah.
G4.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, we're at G4 building. But, you know, come back anytime you want. And, you know, if you... I don't know.
I would love it.
Hang out.
Sounds good.
All right. Thanks for being here, Will Forte.
Thank you.
Enjoy a burrito, everyone.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
Do you ever wonder what your teenager is going through when they're preparing to leave home and enter the real world? I'm Shima Liai, and in my new podcast, The Competition, I'll give you an inside look into the pressures and expectations high school girls have to face.
I think I need to make a good first impression, or at least an impressive first impression.
We're going to follow 50 teenage girls as they spend 2 weeks in Mobile, Alabama, competing in the largest cash scholarship competition exclusively for high school girls. You'll hear the silly, intimate moments.
Why are you so amazing?
Like, I want to be you guys.
And the anxiety that comes with being an ambitious girl in America.
My whole life, I've told myself that I need to be a 35-year-old professional.
Is the pressure too much to handle? From Pineapple Street Studios and Wondery, this is The Competition. Follow The Competition on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can binge all episodes of The Competition early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.